I'm Frank Vaughn. It's February 28th, 2026. And I did something yesterday that I don't normally do. I took a day away from the desk to go and visit some family friends. It's the first time I've visited the man of the house, and it's the first time I've been to their residence. And I'm always a little nervous doing these things because just about everybody that I meet is familiar with my work. And I'm always afraid of it costing my children friends. But luckily, it didn't go that way. It went rather well, but the gentleman asked me a question. So we were talking about my work, and he said, how would you, I don't know the exact wording, but he said something like, how would you describe what it is you're actually aiming for, trying to do, or your objective? And I thought about it for a minute, and I said something about my focus being kind of Canada-centric, because that's where I live, and then radiating out from there. But I think that was totally wrong. I spent some time thinking about it. What I really just want to do is I want to try to find objective truth, something nuanced. I don't want to carry political water. I don't want to do narratives. I just want to pursue what is fulsomely. And admittedly, that is darn near an impossible task because it's a pursuit of something. It's not an end. It's a journey. And with that in mind, today's video is going to provide some uncomfortable truths that are truths, whether they're uncomfortable or not. And they have a lot of relevance right now because America and Israel are off to bombing Iran. The first thing I want to say is I don't intend to carry water for the mullahs. I don't intend to carry water for radical Islam. It exists. I know it exists. I've talked about it on my channel. And there will be epithets and there will be aspersions cast in the comment section, as there always is, just like there is on Twitter whenever I say something that's true, but is counter-narrative. I don't understand how people can escape the reality that, for one thing, if radical Islam is in control of Iran, which it is to a degree, and if it's a very religious fundamentalist control, if the leader of that fundamentalism issues a fatwa, a religious edict, that says the country is not pursuing nuclear weapons, how can you say they're lying? If religion is the ultimate form of government in that place, then a religious edict is pretty binding, pretty important, you would think, right? The Iranians have said repeatedly that they are not pursuing nuclear weapons, but they want to pursue enrichment above and beyond 2-3% for market reasons, so that they can find clients. They're willing to submit themselves to IAEA supervision. And though that we've been told for 30 years now, largely by the same cast of characters, that Iran was weeks away from a nuclear weapon, they've never detonated one, and they still don't have one today. But now, if you listen to Trump's, I wouldn't even call it a speech because that thing was pre-recorded. It's got edits in it all over the place. Kind of reminded me a little bit of the theme, a very dark blue, dark Trump. The goal of the war, the objectives have shifted because during the bombing of Fordo in the 12-day war, the objective was to eliminate Iran's nuclear program. Trump declared victory. He said, we did it. And all carrier groups steamed away from the Middle East, and it seemed that once again, Donald Trump had successfully navigated his way away from the regime change war that the neocons and his administration and the Israelis want. They want it. And he's avoided it several times. And maybe this is, there's been a high level of coordination between the Iranians and the United States through the assassination of Soleimani and the Iranian response being telecast, even during the 12-day war, even though Israel and Iran were flinging ordnance back and forth, left, right, and center. Remember, during the 12-day war, we were told that the Iranian regime was on the verge of collapse and that the students would rise up and they would take it over and it was all going to happen within a matter of weeks. It didn't. The regime survived. But when the United States went in and bombed those facilities, Iran said, we're going to hit these targets. We're going to do it at this time. And we're giving you some notice that it's going to happen. And the Americans moved their assets around. And it was a coordinated theatrical display, as far as I'm concerned, just like with Soleimani. This looks different. This looks like something much more real. And maybe there's some clever scheme here to take out the IRGC commanders and parachute the Shah in while leaving the regime mostly intact. I mean, if you look at what happened in Venezuela, for instance, taking out Maduro but leaving the regime intact, and now there is a degree of cooperation between Venezuela and the United States, maybe there's a plan. Maybe there's a plan that I can't see, that none of us can see, that isn't being telecast by the administration. Because as far as I am concerned, for all the media coverage and all the public policy statements that I've followed, there's no real plan for what the Iranian government looks like after they take out the mullahs and the IRGC. It doesn't seem like there's a real plan for restoring order in Iran. And you have to remember, again, this is just objective truth. The track record of the United States and the track record of NATO is very good. When you look at Libya, it's just chaos. Gaddafi taken out. Libya now has open-air slave markets and three tribes in perpetual warfare. Iraq's not much better. They didn't become friends of the United States. In fact, they often work against U.S. interests. Afghanistan was a nightmare. Syria has been an ongoing, simmering campaign with way more nations involved, and Christians haven't been doing very good. And that's another thing. The fact that Iran has the fastest growing Christian population in the Middle East is something to think about. I wouldn't dare sit here and pretend that Christians don't face some level of oppression in Iran, but there's over a million of them. And they're growing every year. There's something to the effect of 600 churches in Iran today, in spite of the fact that they face oppression. And one of the things that I posted to Twitter last night, and this is objective truth that people deny, that Christ in Islam is a major prophet, messenger of God, born of the Virgin Mary, the Messiah, or the Al-Masi, same word, just in Arabic, performed miracles, will return at the end of time. They don't believe he was crucified. They believe he was risen to heaven by God. So they don't believe he's the Son of God. They don't believe in the divinity of Christ. But they believe in his importance. Whereas in Judaism, he's a historical first century Jewish teacher, rabbi from Nazareth, not the Messiah, not divine, not Son of God, not part of any Trinity, not a prophet, irrelevant to the Jewish faith. And in fact, they hate him to this day. You don't have to take my word for it. I've done the work. I've read books. I've watched many a rabbi on YouTube tell me how Christianity is an existential threat to Judaism. Because in spite of religious persecution in Israel, which is very real, you understand the Church of the Nativity is surrounded by separation walls, that the Israelis heavily restrict traffic and worship there, that even though you can theoretically worship in Bethlehem, it is so restrictive that most Christians will never see it. Maintenance is effectively opposed. The site is managed by the three churches under a status quo agreement. Money comes from Jordan, which, by the way, the Jordanians, it's a over 90% Muslim country. I can't remember off the top of my head how far into the 90s Jordan gets, but there's a significant minority of Christians, 3% of the population. Many of them are involved within the power elite of Jordan. They have money. They have beautiful churches. They coexist without repression, without discrimination, beside their Arab neighbors. And the fact of the matter is, Christians in Israel get spit on. They have violent acts committed against them. Israel bombs Christian churches. They effectively aren't doing anything to stop the slaughter of Christians in Syria. For that matter, neither is the United States. Putting in an ISIS caliphate leader, taking out Assad, which, whether you liked Assad or not, or thought he was brutal, he held the place together. These borders that are constructed around these countries are completely artificial. Just drawn on maps. They don't respect the original ethnic lines of where people actually lived and the cultures that actually lived in the Middle East. So oftentimes you have strong men like Gaddafi, or you have a strong man like Assad, or you have a strong man like Hussein, who holds the various factions together and creates relative peaceful conditions, at least creates stability. And I'm not carrying water for them, I'm just saying what is. And in Syria, under Assad, Christians, Arabs, Druze, many others could coexist. And then the seeds of destruction were sowed and the seeds of disorder. And now you have an ISIS man in there who's been invited to the White House. Somebody that the CIA had a bounty on. If somebody was daring enough to take his head, they could have got paid. They put him in a soup. They put a Patek watch on his wrist. They parachuted him in. They gave him a public relations upgrade. And now they're off to massacring Christians in Syria, all under the watchful eyes of the United States, Israel, the Turks, who are more than happy with the situation. I posted pictures last night of, I'm not going to bother showing it. I just don't even care today. But the Holy Virgin Mary metro station in Tehran, filled with, you can see it on my Twitter if you want. Nobody cares. I mean, nobody wants to see this. Nobody wants to see this reality where you have murals painted with the Virgin Mary. You have pictures of Jesus. And not just that, you have churches with crosses on top. It's distinctly Iranian. But there it is. Paid for by the state government of Iran. The Israeli state would never do this for Christians. They don't do this for Christians. And we have this great big blind spot. And I've always found it fascinating that there's this view that supporting political Israel is a core fundamental mission of Christianity. And I've read the New Testament many times. I can't figure out how you arrive at that conclusion. But there's millions of evangelicals and evangelical leaders in the United States who believe that protecting Israel is the most important American foreign policy objective, so much so that Kash Patel gets appointed to the FBI and is asked the question, what's your top priority as head of the FBI? Didn't say murder, didn't say drug crime, didn't say illegal immigration, he said Israel. They asked the same question of Dan Bongino. His answer, Israel. And we're not supposed to ask why that is. We're not supposed to point out things. This is, again, just going to upset a lot of people, and you'll just have to get upset because it's reality. No one wants to discuss what Christianity looked like before there was a Roman church, not a Roman Catholic church, before the takeover of Christianity by Roman universalism, before hundreds of years after Christ walked the earth, it was decided. A decision was taken to marry the two faiths together and call it Judeo-Christian. But the first several hundred years of Christianity was passed from person to person in humble meetings, basement dwellings and houses. Many operated in the open, and Christianity swept the world. And Christianity had no Roman center. That was developed later. And most Christians, for the first several hundred years, believed that Christianity and Judaism had nothing to do with each other. That's history. That's a fact. And by the sword, by killing, which is very anti-Christian, and by edict, and by law, and by political expediency, the original faith was snuffed out, and was replaced by what we have today, a 1600-year history of Roman universalism. Even through the Reformation and through Protestantism, through every branch of the Christian tree, it all comes from Rome. And the early history is still there for those who want to look at it, but it's forgotten. The Old Testament, the first Bible that was ever written, was just the New Testament. And many iterations after that did not contain the Old Testament. That marriage happened later. We're living in a time when the consequences of that decision, made by men, not by God, made by men, are coming to life before our eyes. So more practically speaking, because, like I said, I'm not here to carry water for politicians, but there is a lot about the Trump administration and what the United States is doing that I like. The Monroe Doctrine is the best game in town. It's not that I'm a statist. It's not that I love my government. It's not that I love the fact that whenever you think about anything that you do, whenever you ponder the consequences of an unlawful act, or getting in the way of state progress, or not paying your property taxes, or not paying your income taxes, or any revolution speaking too strongly to individuals about your views on gender or rainbow flags or anything for that matter, that at the end of the day, every single law is backed up by a gun and leads to lethal force. You know, I was having a conversation again yesterday, and I did a thought experiment at one point, and I never made a video about it. There's so many ideas that I have to communicate that it's impossible to get them all on video and actually expect them to be watched. But I did a thought experiment about not paying your property taxes. That's all it was. I pay my taxes. It's protection money. You pay it so that you can exist. And for those who think not voting means you don't get to complain, as long as you're paying taxes, you can complain as loudly and as longly as you want. As far as I'm concerned, voting is just window dressing most of the time. Counts more in the United States. I will make that argument. Americans have a lot more power. It's just most Americans shrug it off. They have so many privileges that I wish I had because I would deploy them in my life, but I don't have any of that. I'm a subject to a king. I get to mark an X on a useless ballot for political parties that have filtered out anybody interesting before they ever get to the nomination and standing in election. It's just a terrible system. But the thought experiment that I did involved not paying your property taxes. And so years can go by without you paying your property taxes and you go through a procedure, but ultimately after about 3 years, roughly 3 years, a little bit less, you'll have a sheriff show up at your door, not a sheriff that you elect like in America, just somebody who's appointed. They'll probably have officers with them to change the locks and evict you from your house. If you resist them, ultimately if you refuse and it escalates, there's actually a legal mechanism in Canada that eventually leads to airstrikes. If you effectively resist law enforcement for not paying your property taxes, if you effectively resist for long enough and you go up the chain of escalation, there is a legal procedure that's on the books that leads directly to the Canadian military bombing your property out of existence. I shouldn't laugh, but ultimately, the only point I'm trying to make is that it ultimately all ends in force. But at any rate, let's get more practical since we're probably, I don't even know how long we're into this thing now. I guess we'll just keep going. You want to hope this war with Iran ends quickly. That's what you want. For practical purposes. American and Israeli munitions are thin. If Iran can survive and effectively counterattack and prolong this thing, and no one knows if they can, but if they do, they'll start doing more and more damage to U.S. and Israeli assets, and it will tank the Republicans' chances for re-election in November. And if they lose control of the House and they lose control of the Senate, the Trump administration will get bogged down just like it did in 16, especially if the war extends for months. And there's precedent for this, folks. This isn't just, there's this idea that America walks in and just raffle stomps everybody. And conventionally, they do. But seldom are American objectives ever served in their wars. Look at Afghanistan. Something that Trump talked about, by the way, on the campaign trail. You know, I retweeted a tweet by Trump criticizing Obama in 2013 for not being able to get a deal done, a significant deal done with Iran. And people say, you know, things changed. That was 13 years ago. You know, perspective changed and he's updated his worldview. And I'm like, campaign Trump said that they couldn't get a nuclear weapon. That was his defining goal, was that Iran could not, the mullahs could not have a nuclear weapon. He was against regime change wars. He was against war in general, peace through strength, all of the talking points. And it was actually Kamala Harris who was campaigning on continuing the war in Ukraine, for one thing, but also getting active when it came to Iran. And it's so weird because the Democrats, they flip back and forth. Their talking points are just so malleable. So in one election cycle, they say that Trump is going to cause World War III. And as I noted during the last election cycle, Kamala Harris was promising and campaigning on World War III. So was Hillary Clinton, for that matter. You could write a book. You could write a book about it if you want. I'm sure people have. But we're now being delivered a regime change war. Maybe it's too early to make that declaration. I almost wanted to wait a week before I started talking about this, but I'm sure the audience expects me to comment on it, those that are left. You want to hope this thing ends quick. You want to hope it wraps up. I don't think there's a sufficient plan in place for what happens to Iran after you take out the Ayatollahs and you take out the IRGC. Is the plan to leave elements of the government in place? Because there is hope for that. The idea that you can parachute the Shah in there and have him successfully rule, if you've already arranged the cooperation of elements of the Iranian government. And it's quite possible that that's happened, because if you believe the student riots, if you believe the student protests are entirely organic, you just don't understand the history of the intelligence community. The things that are happening in Iran have the CIA, the MI6, and the Mossad's fingerprints all over them. And then people will say, that's a conspiracy theory, it's entirely organic. But at the same time, those very intelligence organizations, particularly Mossad, brag about how much influence they have on the ground. Those things can't be true at the same time. So though I think there is a genuine desire to get rid of the Ayatollahs, don't get me wrong, the whole procedure is not necessarily organic. But maybe the idea is, if the intelligence community is actively involved in Iran doing that, maybe they're actively involved in undermining the Iranian government and making arrangements for the taking out of those who are responsible for trying to hold the regime in place, getting rid of them, and leaving enough of it intact that you can bring in the Shah, and in the wake of this operation, they can cobble together a government and leave the infrastructure in place and not blow up everything. And we'll see. These are early days. When I spoke earlier in the week about, actually, I think I've made several videos now talking about this very thing. I said that the first week would be very intense, matching munitions availability. And then after about a week or so, the United States and Israel will have to switch to targeted attacks. If the regime hasn't fallen in a week, then this thing could really get protracted. Remember the lesson of Yugoslavia, the former Yugoslavia, when the Americans went into Serbia. It was supposed to be done in a week. It took 78 days. There's just a history of things going wrong for American power. The stuff doesn't go as planned. That's the nature of warfare. Planning's great. The process of planning is great. But once things get active, oftentimes the plans get jettisoned because reality dictates what it is you're going to do. And again, I'll reiterate that if this does extend and munitions get depleted, and more resources have to be committed in the Middle East, there's a big opportunity opening up starting tomorrow in March. I mean, it's It's not fixed just to March, but March has good weather. We've talked about this on the channel before when it comes to Taiwan and the Taiwan Strait. China is intent to announce and display their power to the world. Their military is untested. Their technology is untested. They can do drills all they want. They can do testing behind the range, but until you get active and operate in a theater, you haven't really put it on display. You haven't really come onto the world stage as a military power. You can build as much as you want, but if you don't build it, or if you don't use it, you're not projecting power. American hegemony has been built upon demonstrations of American power, even where American power hasn't been up to the task. Again, Vietnam, Afghanistan, other examples that you can go around the world and you can find for people who care about reality. I think there's a big opportunity opening up for China to do just that. And when I look at the United States and their efforts through tariffs to reshore manufacturing, and I explained this in a previous video, but I'm just going to go over it again briefly. Tariffs are paid by the American consumer. That's true. That's the talking point. And that's where most people who use that talking point stop talking. And they should keep going if they were honest, because it is true that the American taxpayer pays for tariffs. But if there is a corresponding reduction in the income tax, the difference is, if you're a prosperous American making money, income tax takes a percent of that that's fixed. You don't have any control of it. It just leaves your pocket most of the time before you even pay it. With a tariff, you have a choice. You don't pay the tariff if you don't consume the product. Isn't that cool? Isn't that elegant? Isn't that better as a form of taxation? And then companies that don't want to sell expensive products that make their stuff in America don't have to pay a tariff. And the American consumer who buys from that company doesn't have to pay the tariff. That's the elegance of the idea. But through these tariffs, the Americans are trying to reshore the manufacturing that's been outsourced to Taiwan, and they've been making a lot of efforts to attract Taiwanese talent to come to America to continue their business there. And this has been a process that's been ongoing for months, maybe since before Trump even came into office, but it's been ongoing for a while. And I think that's because there is a recognition that if we are to live in this world and we are to survive, considering the world does not recognize overall Taiwanese independence, it's part of China. It's part of the Republic of China. And it sucks for those people in Taiwan who don't want anything to do with China, but there is a large percentage of the Taiwanese population that would like closer relationship with, like a closer relationship with the people who are just across the channel from them. Just like in Canada, there's a large portion of people here, like myself, who realistically understand that we need the United States like the desert needs rain. Or like maybe a better example would be like the forest needs rain. Without rain, there is no forest. We live right next to each other. We do a lot of business with each other. We need each other. The United States is irreplaceable to Canada. It's an absolute delusion to think we can't exist without them. And you can talk about the pitfalls and the risks facing the Trump administration without being a traitor to this idea. This is why I hate the side versus side, spy versus spy model of political commentary. We need far more true neutrals or people who are dedicated to just trying to get to the reality of things. The reality of Iran, as far as I can see it, not for any political reason, not for any motive that I have, is this whole thing is a big risk. You want to hope it's coordinated. I'm not sure it is. You want to hope it's quick. I'm not sure it will be. We're all going to find out. It's less than 24 hours old at this point. We just have to wait and watch. I know, we all know, that American military inventories are thin. That if this extends, there is risk of significant American casualties and Israeli casualties. reports coming out of Iran is that there is already heavy civilian death tolls. I don't know how long you can go on with a high civilian casualty rate before you lose the population. Recall, there's this idea that keeps coming up that Iran is on the verge of revolution. We were fed the same line during the 12-day war. Didn't even come close. We've been told that the Iranian government has killed 35,000 students. You can't believe the number. There's been repression. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to carry water for the Iranians. I'm trying to get to what is reality. And all of us are staring through a fog. We're the way that we view Iran is curated by intelligence services. That's reality. And so we're left to parse the thing. It's not the same as the other theaters of operation that the Americans have been involved in. When you look at Afghanistan, the disaster that that was, Iran is so much stronger and bigger. And I'm not really sure it serves American foreign policy objectives. We're going to find out a lot of things. There's this idea that, I keep seeing this talking point. Iran tried to kill him, Donald Trump, numerous times. I don't think that's the case at all. I think other actors tried to kill Donald Trump. His message was dangerous during the election. We got to end the forever wars. Does anybody remember that? I saw a comment responding to somebody who was in the minutes after the first footage was coming out online at the early hours of this morning, actually, before I got a few hours sleep. Footage was coming out of the smoke rising over Tehran, and this guy, one of the top comments that had like 700 likes and it was growing exponentially, said, "This is exactly what I voted for." And I'm thinking to myself, I seem to remember a different campaign from what these people are talking about. End the forever wars. Stop the regime change war. Tulsi Gabbard comes on board speaking that message. Something changed. Maybe it was the bullet that winged the ear. But that being said, over the first year, Trump had successfully navigated the neocon minefield. I don't think this situation, now that they're off to bombing Iran, I don't think it's entirely under Trump's control anymore. And if it extends, let me summarize it this way. Taking out and bombing Iran serves Israeli foreign policy objectives. So far, Israel has done very good in the last year, year and a half, advancing their objectives in the Middle East, neutralizing their enemies. But you can agree with that, you can celebrate it, you can do whatever you want. I'm just trying to look at what is. And once America is involved in Iran, either bogged down or the Ayatollahs are gone, this is a masterstroke. A friendly regime gets installed in Iran under the perfect conditions. And they manage to rule Iran and they keep all the infrastructure together. And that oil is unleashed and the sanctions are lifted. And everything works out miraculously well. Even in that case, and also in the worst case scenario is America gets bogged down and they're stuck there and they can't get out. We can't get out. It doesn't go as planned. Remember, the generals said no to this. They didn't want it. They said the U.S. Army was not ready to do this. And you could say all the generals, just Democrat plants. They're just trying to undermine Trump. But Trump himself celebrates these people. So square the circle. I can't do the pretzel logic thing. God forbid the Americans get bogged down. This thing doesn't go quick. Trump becomes expendable. Because once America is committed, Israel doesn't need him anymore. And it's clear to me now that they're calling the shots of the Trump administration. Maybe he resisted it for a while. Maybe there's some kind of Machiavellian plan to check Israel. I know people from the QAnon community and sharing peppy memes. They're always just like, Israel comes last. Trump is turning the table. There's certain influencers out there who have been recommended in my comments section numerous times. You need to watch this person. And over again, they make forward-looking statements, very firm, very confident statements, only to be wrong. And never do a shred of introspection. They just go on making forward-looking statements. These people told you there would be no war with Iran. Told you it wasn't going to happen. It was just a display of force, saber rattling. And I guarantee you, when I look at their video content, which I will, when I look at their video content today or tomorrow, whenever they put it out, they're not going to be backward looking at what they said before. They're just going to be forward looking. They're going to generate another narrative. So I don't focus on making firm predictions because I'm just a pleb with a webcam who spends an inordinate amount of time in his office trying to figure out the world and using what acquaintances and contacts I have to try and gather insight about Canada. You know, one guy was making fun of me today. Oh, I'm sure you have all of these great sources. I'm not that guy. I don't sit here and pretend I'm the keeper of secret information. I don't put myself up that way. I'm quite humble in my approach compared to many. But I do try and figure things out. And I have deep concerns about the promise of Fortress North America, the Monroe Doctrine, and everything, or the Donroe Doctrine, everything that's cool about the recognition that we are past the hegemonic moment, the universal hegemon moment, where America runs the entire world, where the Russians want to come in. You know, when Putin wanted to become part of NATO, when Putin went to the WEF, when we were supposed to be bringing the Russians in and the Chinese wanted to integrate with the West and everything was led by the United States in that era of Bill Clinton and Bush the Younger. That moment's gone. It passed. And now you have a resurgent China that's far closer to National Socialist than they are to communism. I often engage in this because sometimes I have to bend my head to common parlance to make a more important point. We often call them commies and how we don't want commies here. I tend to call them CCP agents. But Communist Party of China is pretty much what that means. They're national socialists. They're an ethno-nationalist state, heavily socialized. They're about China. They're resurgent. They're trying to create the BRICS. They're trying to create an alternative international settlement unit that has much more sound money principles. Not perfect, but has more sound money principles than anything on offer from the West in our derivative scheme, this evil usury derivative paper nonsense that we've been dealing with since the collapse of Bretton Woods. They're not interested anymore in being dominated by Europe. They might want to live in collaboration, cooperation with the United States and the rest of the world, but they are certainly not interested in being dominated, and neither is Russia. Russia doesn't want to come in anymore. They've been invaded by Europe 6 times. NATO expanded right up to their border, if you want to call it the 7th time. The Ukraine war is a product of Western interventions. And anybody that tells you otherwise is just lying to you or woefully ignorant, and they shouldn't be talking. We overthrew a lawfully elected and constituted Ukrainian government, swapped in our own people with John McCain filming it and laughing the entire time. An evil man, if ever there was one. And then from 14 forward, that government engaged in an ethnic and cultural cleansing of Eastern Ukraine, driving them into rebellion. And the Russians did nothing but try to negotiate. The Minsk agreements were agreed. They were not implemented. Eventually, the Russians engaged in a special military operation, an intervention. Every bit as justified as any NATO intervention, and probably far more justifiable than any NATO intervention in the last 30 years. Maybe that's too broad a sweep. Certainly in the last decade and a half. If NATO intervention in Serbia was justified, then Russian intervention in eastern Ukraine was certainly justified and is justified. And in spite of escalation after escalation after escalation on the part of Europe, the Russians have engaged restraint, and you should thank them for it. Because that restraint is the only thing that separates us right now from a total global war. And I don't think the Iran situation helps. And I thought the wisdom of the Trump administration coming in was in ending the support for the war. The United States can end that war. He said he could end it in a day. He could. You just withdraw American support entirely. We won't sell them arms, and we won't take European money to do it. Leave Europe to fight that war if that's what they want. And before you know it, you'll have a settlement. And I don't know where that went. It went by the wayside. People say Trump has an unblemished record of keeping all his promises. He said he'd end it day one. Oh, that was hyperbole. Well, you can't have it both ways, folks. I'll finish this way because I know this is long. Trump is one guy. He goes to the can just like everybody else and drops a deuce every single morning. He's a human being. There's only so much any human being can do. Do not put your faith in men. Put your reason. Deploy your reason for these things. No faith in politicians. Only reason and verification. Maybe some trust. If you're going to have faith, you put it in the Father. Or whatever else you follow. Faith for that which you can't see. Reason for that which you can. I think this Iran thing is a big pitfall. I will be glad to be totally wrong. I will be glad if it resolves very fast and it's all over again in 12 days. But I think I'm more concerned now than I've been ever. I'm Frank Vaughn, and if you're still here, please consider supporting my work via the website. I'll see you in the next one.